B-Pod Studios.
Danny Ainge is the president of basketball operations for the Boston Celtics. He joins us on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline. Mr. Danny Ainge, hello.
Pretty good. Fred, I'm excited to hear that you're giving basketball takes now.
Okay, well, hey.
And then you actually watched the game last night.
Hey, you want me to blow your mind? Do you want me to blow your mind right now?
Yes.
Okay, I sacrifice so much time to use sports. The junior Celtics came and gave a three-hour presentation that I attended on Tuesday evening. And
nice.
There was a guy from the Positive Coaching Alliance who spent the end of the regular season and the playoffs with you and Brad. And had a lot of positive things to say. And I will tell you one thing that he said, and we can talk about this. I think it's interesting, is he said that, what's the Australian guy?
Aaron Baines.
And he said that he used the 5-1. Danny, what's the 5-1?
I have no idea.
All right. Well, you call yourself a coach. All right. 5-1 is 5 compliments to 1 negative thing. And he said, Brad...
A coaching philosophy, okay.
And Phil Jackson made it up, but he's a hippie. But, okay, so he says that Baines, he wanted him to shoot threes, and he said that when he was watching these practices, Baines had terrible form, he was all over the place, but due to Brad's confidence in him, he became an adequate three-point shooter.
Yeah, and Baines is like leading the league now in 3-point shooting in Phoenix.
Okay, so my question is Brad's coaching style that you wanted him to shoot 3-pointers, was his coaching style? He has that effect on the players that his positivity and his in the way he coaches in practice gives these guys the confidence to try things out of their comfort zone.
Yes, absolutely. Brad is very positive-oriented coaching style, and he does not like to have players thinking too much about shot selection, and he wants to give them the freedom to play and feel free. And especially, you know, Baines as a 3-point shooter is a perfect example of that.
And now, next speaker, general manager of the Maine Red Claws. So... Who do you think he said was the hardest worker on the Celtics main roster?
Semi Ojeleye.
Oh, baby, you got that on the you hit that on the head. He said Semi Ojeleye because he. It was interesting because and Danny, you can talk about this because we do 4 hours a day of this, but basketball seems even easier. He was talking about how you can. You could have a 4-hour day. You come in, you do some warm-ups, you have a 1 or 2 hour practice, 90-minute practice, then, you know, you get into a cold bath, maybe you get a massage, and then the rest of the day is yours. And he said Semi is there constantly.
Yeah, I mean, Jimmy was – I left the garden late last night just because I spent some time with Brad and as they get ready for the road trip and waiting for the traffic to clear out. And anyway, Shemmy was still in the weight room training after post-game, and he played. And, you know, sometimes he'll do that even when he doesn't play, but he had played some minutes and he was still in there. But, yeah, that's who Shemmy is. He's in the gym often late at night if I'm there, and I hear the ball bouncing. My first guest is Shemmy.
Okay, so, and also my final thing, because, Danny, I'm impressing you, and there's no doubt about it, he mentioned that young players, and there was a player on the team that he thinks is a brilliant basketball mind. He's a very young player, but he's a little immature, and he is almost Rondo-esque in that he will ask questions of the coaches. He will challenge the coaches. Do you know who he would be talking about?
Maybe Tremont Waters or maybe Romeo Langford. I think they both fit into that.
It was Romeo. Well, Tremont Waters, he said, has a tremendous basketball mind, and that was who he was talking about. He said that he is challenging, he said. And then Romeo Langford, he said, is very immature, and that in that he's a great guy, but he's very immature. So there is a coach that they basically assigned to him to take him around Boston and things like that. Is that true?
You know, I don't think he's very immature. I think he's young, and I think he has some growing up to do for sure, and just becoming more of a professional and all those things like most every kid at his age. But, yeah, I think he has a really good mind, and I think he's a willing learner and a question asker. So I'm really excited about Romy's future.
Okay, now how much have I impressed you with my insight into the goings-on behind the scenes with the Celtics?
Yeah, no, that's a good class you're taking, the Tuesday night coaching classes. I think that'll get you right there. You mean our next candidate.
Okay, our practices are at Brown Middle School in Newton on Sundays from 6 to 7. I expect you to come when?
No. Not coming.
Not for the kids? The struggling youth of Newton?
No, I'm coming to a game. I'll come to a game maybe, but not a practice.
Oh, hold him to it, Fred. That's awesome.
Okay.
He's counting.
All right, you come to the game, you coach the game.
Oh, no. I'll watch the game. Sounds like you know how to coach. You know what you're doing in coaching now, Fred.
I do not. I refuse to run a zone because I think that's bad for the kids. Do you agree?
Yeah, at what age are we talking?
We're talking sixth graders, baby, the big time.
Yeah. They need to learn to stay in front of their man. Defensive fundamental, sure.
And before I let people who know more about the professional game than I, what sort of offense should I run?
Well, they need to learn spacing at six because they all bunch up and chase the ball.
Yeah.
Like young kids in soccer, so they need to learn to be patient and keep the floor spaced. That's the number one priority.
Yeah, that's the point where I start screaming from the sidelines. Space it out, dum-dum! And so that's my coaching style. But thank you for your time. Now I will turn it over to Richard Lee.
These questions will be way less detailed or interesting than Fred's are. I guarantee you that. But you mentioned Aaron Baines and how well his three-point shooting has gone. And the one major thing that I've noticed this year is I've stopped screaming at my TV when Marcus Smart launches up a three. He has gone in 3 years, in three different seasons in a row, from being one of the worst three-point shooters, guys that just ill-advised shots, to last year, him getting better, going through streaks, to this year being a legitimate good three-point shooter. As a matter of fact, this morning I checked, he has the same three-point percentage as Chris Middleton, and he's 2 points ahead of Buddy Hield. Scott Brooks even yesterday was saying that we can't leave him open anymore. This guy's a legitimately good three-point shooter. Did he do anything in the offseason? Like, did he meet with a specialist, or was there any kind of concerted effort to correct that part of his game? Because whatever it is, it's working.
Well, so Marcus, my opinion of Marcus was I thought that when we drafted Marcus that he had a chance to be a good three-point shooter with his mechanics and so forth. And he started out bad, but then he had, if you remember, he had like a couple years with he had messed up hand, right hand. He had a thumb surgery, and he was playing with a splint on his hand in the playoffs 1 year. I mean, he had the situation where he had a bunch of stitches put in his right hand. He punched a mirror. And so he's gone through some of that, and I think that has affected his three-point percentage in years prior. But last year, Marcus shot the ball great from three. I think he was a 36% three-point shooter last year. And the thing I appreciate about Marcus, you can't just look at percentages. Marcus is a guy on our team who will shoot the ball from three-quarter court as the buzzer's sounding or as the shot clock's going down. He'll heave it where a lot of players just hold it to protect their percentages. And Marcus doesn't care about that stuff. He's all about winning the game. But I think Marcus has been a good three-point shooter all year last year. 1 year, he shot over 40% from the three-point line during the playoffs in our long Eastern Conference run. So I'm not surprised that he's that people are starting to recognize him as a three-point shooter.
Do you feel for Marcus when he complains about not getting the calls that these superstar players get? And he was saying that, you know, people, he's constantly being hit, when he's also a guy that for the last several years he's cleaned it up, but was a notorious flopper. Do you feel for him when he complains about that? Or is this kind of, unfortunately, for a while until that reputation goes away, this is the bed you've laid in?
Well, you know, here's the thing I have about flopping. Like, I have a problem with the word flopping in general, because I think that you're not flopping if you actually are simply drawing attention to the contact made, the illegal contact made in most times. So if a guy bashes you with his left shoulder and you go down to the ground, that is not a flop. That's drawing attention to the play, which you have to do. Otherwise, referees aren't going to call it.
But Marcus does that when he's not hit. Sometimes, or used to, rather.
Yeah. Okay, so I think that, you know, then that could be considered a flop. But I don't think he does as much of that as people say he does.
Not anymore. Yeah, you're right.
I think that Marcus is a very physical player. But, you know, he's a very emotional guy, too, as we know. So I think that there are times when I think that he did get the raw end of the call, and there's times when Marcus thinks he got the raw end of the call, and I don't really think he did. I watched the replay, and no, like, that was the right call. But I think that's the case with every player.
How much
go ahead.
I was going to say, Dan, how much did it burn you as a player when somebody would flop and you would end up getting a foul for it, and you're just standing there knowing it was faked?
Well, you would flop five times for every time someone flopped.
Yeah, I was a pretty good flopper, too. I think I got the better end of that deal than the guys flopping against me. But
if you would argue that, I would have had to call you out.
I think that, again, you know, like, I believe acting. I've joked with players that I've coached and talked to, you know, like, they need to do a better job of acting. Like, you have to, which I should send them to a thespian class in the middle of the summer and teach them how to act and draw attention to the game, to the play.
What's the key to delivering the best flop? Because Paul Pierce had that. He would yell every time, and that would be one thing that I think he got more calls just from that yell than anything that he did with his hands or his body.
Yeah, no, I think that yelling is part of it. You hear that a lot. A lot of players are yelling to, you know, the official and grunting as they're going into the basket and making it seem like they're getting hit. But, again, you know, if you do it too much and you're not, and the referees are, you know, they watch all their calls on their travels, and, you know, they see all of it. And so they know at the end of the game, wow, I was really wrong on those two Jason Tatum calls tonight or the Jaylen Brown calls. And, you know, they know that. They know which ones they missed and which ones they didn't miss, and they know which ones where the players tried to show them up and, you know, they had the right call. And so, yeah, you build a reputation in this league. It's a small world, and there's not that many referees, and they do know guys that are showing them up, guys that are complaining too much, guys that they made wrong calls on because they got tricked. So you develop a reputation as your career goes on.
All right, speaking of Paul Pierce, I don't have to tell you, you guys got a lot of retired numbers. 22 numbers, a nickname. I know that you have mentioned recently about considering possibly issuing some of those numbers. Where do you stand on that? Because, I mean, when, you know, almost 25% of all two-digit numbers that you can have are taken, and maybe you're trying to recruit. I know that there was a problem with Kevin Durant because he was number 35, and I believe it was Reggie Lewis, unfortunately. Yeah. But his number had been retired. And you couldn't, you know, like, it might hurt recruitment if people want to keep their number. Are you considering possibly issuing retired numbers?
Would Cedric Maxwell be the first? Because he is the most,
no.
He's the most...
least worthy is what you're trying
least
to say.
Worthy, yes. of everyone.
Listen, I'm not looking to do anything. First of all, that's 100% Wick's call on whether we do or not do that. But I'm not in any rush. I broached the subject a couple years ago as a possibility. At some point, we may need to consider an alternative, just because we have 17-man rosters, instead of 12. And, you know, the numbers are, you see the numbers that our guys are playing with. It's different. And so I'm not in a rush to do it. I love our history. I love our tradition. I love the retired numbers hanging in our practice facility and at the garden. All of that is fantastic, and it's rich in history. And I just think that there's going to come a time, if we do too many more, if we do some more, that we may have to consider an alternative. And the other thing that I think that would be helpful is, you know, a whole generation of people don't even know who a lot of those numbers are. And so by acknowledging the names with the numbers could be beneficial, too, at some point. But anyway, it's
Ring
not
of
a
Honor.
Deal.
Ring of Honor is, yeah.
A Ring of Honor is a possibility someday, but again, that's just my opinion, and you know, that's something that WIC will decide when it's time. But I think that WIC loves the way it is now, and he loves where we are. He's okay with the squirrely numbers that some of the guys are playing with.
All right, so it was obviously a somewhat of a heartbreaker with Gordon Hayward breaking his hand. He was in the middle of what looked like it could have possibly been an all-star season. I mean, obviously, this guy's been dealt some bad breaks. We all know that. When that happened and you found out it was a broken hand, have you spoken with him and kind of seen where his head is at right now?
Oh, yeah. I've spoken with Gordon a handful of times already. He's all right. He's in a good place. I mean, it's a bummer. But it's not, you know, anywhere near what he's had to deal with before. So he, you know, it'll be a 6-week recovery, but he'll be able to keep his legs in shape. He'll be able to get on a bike by tomorrow, and he'll be, you know, running on the court and dribbling with his right hand, you know, by Monday or Tuesday of next week. So he'll be able to stay in shape and stay ready for when the bone heals. And we'll have to, you know, the hardest thing about losing Gordon is not that, you know, just losing him and not having him for a game like last night and putting an extra burden on other players, because Gordon has been playing so great. He's our most efficient player, shooting 57% from the field, having a terrific year. And so now other guys have to do more. And so then when Gordon comes back, you know, then other guys get to do less. And so I think it's always a fun opportunity. I think I've told you guys before, you know, I used to love it when Larry Bird wasn't going to play in a game because he was sick or something on a night. Now, I always, of course, wanted Larry on my team whenever we were playing in the playoffs. But, you know, there are those games where, okay, you know, I'm going to get some more shots up today.
Yeah.
And they get an opportunity to do a lot more. And, you know, and I think that that's a good opportunity for the guys on our team right now. And then when Gordon comes back, you know, trying to fit that back in, sometimes a challenge just when he returns to play. So that's the only bummer about it, is we were really developing. There's been a lot of talk about chemistry of this team, and they're great kids, but they're really figuring each other out on the court too. So now that takes a little bit of a step back, and we'll try to reinvent the rotations and reinvent everything when you lose a significant player like that.
That's not a shooting hand, right?
It is not a shooting hand. No.
How tough is it, like, to, like, having the non-shooting hand hurt? Like, what are some things that are going to be difficult for him?
I think it's going to be much easier with his non-shooting hand than his shooting hand. Gordon does use his left, likes to dribble with his left, but, you know, he's a dominant right-handed finisher. So I think that that's much better than having his left hand be the one that got hurt instead of his right.
Danny, what do we do with this Grant Williams kid?
Grant's a stud. He's going to be fine. I really like his game. I think he's going to be a guy that is a glue to our team, great, high character, versatile player. I'm excited about his future.
Yeah, we'll talk off air. All right. are you on Instagram?
I am on Instagram, yeah.
Do you follow Fred Toucher?
I do not, no.
Are you going to follow? I'm an influencer.
I follow very few people on Instagram.
Again, are you going to follow me on Instagram?
I do follow you on Twitter. I follow you on Twitter.
I don't like Twitter. It's a tool of the man. On Instagram, you follow me. I'm an influencer.
What are you trying to influence me to do?
Buy products?
Like what?
Like I did a yoga pose yesterday, and it was from the mat was from Gary's Yoga Emporium. And
right.
And I got some shades that I'm pushing on the kids. I mean, if you want, I'm sure most of your players follow me on Instagram. It's a connection that you could make. I don't know, but you know, that's up to you, Danny. That's up to you.
Well, I have to check it out. I may give you a few weeks to impress me, but you know, for me to stay with you, you gotta really do something good.
Oh, I'm doing. I was just at a 3-hour Positive Coaching Alliance and listened to the Red Claws guy for an hour. I mean,
okay.
I mean, you got to be impressed by my dedication to the youth.
Yes, I am impressed by that. I agree. I'm very impressed.
Thank
and
you.
That you remembered all that. That you remembered all that stuff. It's impressive.
I was high. All right. Well, well, Danny Ainge, I look forward to you following me. I look forward to you attending one of our games on a Saturday over there at Brown Middle School. And I look forward to our weekly off-air conversation that we have. And we will talk to you next week.
All right, Fred.
All
see
right.
You guys.
Okay, bye.
Tutcher and Rich, mornings.
It was all taken out of context.
98.5 The Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.